Hello, creatives. We have an announcement before we dive into today's podcast. We have a Black Friday sale coming up next week from the 22nd of November to the 27th. There is going to be 40% off everything on our website and 60% if you're a part of our Inspired Collective. The discount is going to be applied at checkout and it will be on absolutely everything on the website, from courses, books, and even our paid podcast. I hope you enjoy today's episode.
The Unpublished Podcast with Amy and James.
Hello, artists. Welcome to another episode of the Unpublished Podcast. My name is Amy.
I'm James.
And you might have just heard an advertisement before we said hello.
An advertisement from us.
From us.
And I just wanted to have a quick conversation with Amy now about ads and why we haven't done ads yet, even though we've been offered ads, what ads look like for podcasters, just a bit of transparency, and why we've decided to do our own ad instead.
Yeah.
So we have been offered advertising.
We have.
For Unpublished, but I've always graded against it. I feel like Amy's been a little bit more interested.
Well, I just feel like, you know, it's hard to know until we try.
Yeah, for sure.
It is an interesting world, and obviously we want to make sure that anyone who wants to advertise on podcasts, like, it's relevant to us and relevant to creatives and also something that we like.
Yeah.
But James, yeah, you've always been much more reticent, is that the word?
Yeah, because I think that for us to do ads would be for us to admit that we didn't understand what podcasting was. Does that make sense?
No, it doesn't. You need to unpack
so
that.
So I think everyone gets podcasting wrong, because everyone sees the big podcasts, you know, I'm not going to name names, the Joe Rogan and the Diary of a CEO and stuff, the big marketing machines.
Names.
I am sorry. I'm so sorry. I decided, obviously, I called an audible mid-sentence there. And I think they think that's what podcasting should be. So if you tell someone that you have a podcast, the first thing they say is, do you make money from it? Much like they ask about art.
Mm.
And I'm always like, you don't get it. Like, if you think that I'm making this podcast to make money from it, like, that's not to say I think that everyone should do podcasts for free, but the point of the podcast is to connect to you guys.
Mm.
Like, that's the whole point. Like, money we make from this would be secondary. Like, it's,
yeah, definitely.
And if having an ad on the podcast infringed in any way on us building a connection with you guys and feeling like that we, I don't know, like, and building that, fostering that relationship, it would be counterproductive.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like it's, for us, it's always been about community and communication. Yes. With our community. But I guess other people go into podcasting and they want it to be a form of income, which I do think is, I think it's a less useful way to use it. But I understand that some people do want to do that, and I'm not dissing that.
I
feel like you are dissing that.
I am dissing it because I think that to do that nowadays, it's so polished. Like, it's this big production thing. People have studios, and that's what people think. I'm not going to start a podcast because I'm going to need a studio. I'm going to need to have, like, 4 audio engineers. We have to have a marketing team and stuff. And that's just a huge investment. Like, people don't want to start a podcast because they think it's starting a TV show.
Mm.
And that's not what I think podcasting should be.
Yeah.
I think podcasting should be, of course, if it gets big, cool.
Like, yeah.
I mean, we don't really focus that much on growing the podcast, although it's nice when it does. Uh-huh. I like it when more of you listen because I have more friends.
Cute.
But I think 90% of people focus on podcasts as if it's a business or if it's something that they want to become, like Joe Rogan.
Mm.
Versus, like, 90% of us should be podcasting because it's a chance for us to connect with people.
Yes. Honestly, this is an incredibly incredibly good marketing tool for us as artists.
Of course. And it's so good for our brand. It's so good for our book sales, like, for our course sales, everything. Like, I'm really grateful for all of you because, I mean, there's no way I can actually link this, but I presume that most of you listening to the podcast are the people who also buy our products.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
And
so there is a financial aspect to our podcasting. But
I'm not consciously thinking about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas to bring sponsorship in is to take the organicness out of it,
yeah.
I think.
I mean, this is the most slapdash podcast I've ever listened to, and I'm the one making it.
I mean, it annoys me when a sponsor shows up and they're like, must have 30-second mid-roll with approval from our team, blah, 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 blah. And then they're like, and we will pay you $50. And you're like, sorry, but...
What?
It will take me 2 hours to work that out. That's valuing my time essentially at like $12.50 an hour.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, no.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, no. And also it adds all of this extra pressure to it and stuff. And it's just,
it's not for us.
I mean, sure, if someone was like, we'll pay you a grand an episode, it would be hard to say no, probably. Yeah. But that's, I think that money only starts coming in once you have hundreds of thousands of people listening potentially or something. Like, but anyway, this isn't our job, you know?
Yeah.
This is something that we do to supplement our job, or it's something that we kind of do almost honestly for fun.
Yeah.
I love what we do. I love doing this. I don't really care about the numbers. I don't really care about anything. I mean, I just care about talking to you guys and to Amy. That's what I'm interested in doing the podcast.
Yeah. I love that. And so I think for us, we have decided to play around with advertising ourselves.
Yes.
So this is, like, again, very new. We haven't actually recorded it yet, but I'm assuming it's brilliant.
Hopefully we get that done. If there was no ad to start, I'm so sorry.
Very, very on brand.
Yeah, and I don't know if we'll continue to do that. But something I wanted to say was that if you do have any thoughts about this, or if you have any feedback on us on doing, like, our own ads at the start of podcasts, you can, the easiest way to contact me is at support@amymcneigh.com, which I can put in the show notes. And if you email me, I'm really bad at email, but I will almost certainly read it.
Yeah.
Whether or not I'll definitely reply to you, I can't promise, but I will definitely read it.
Yeah.
And I'll be interested in what you have to say.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Great. So yeah, this is just kind of where we're at in this space at the moment, but we're, as always, we're incredibly grateful to connect with you.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah.
I know that this is going to annoy you, but I do want to say, if you are wanting to podcast for money, that is very okay.
Of course.
Because I hear a resemblance between this conversation and a conversation around art.
I suppose what I'm saying is that podcast isn't my art.
Yes.
If it's your art, then go for it.
Yeah, and please be paid.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, you won't start getting paid more until you are paid a little bit.
Yeah.
And also, I can understand that if you didn't have another source of artistic income like us, then that $50 an episode would be quite valuable.
Yeah, definitely.
And it would help you to keep the lights on, and help you to, you know, subscriptions you have to pay, or help you pay for audio gear and stuff. I totally get that.
Yeah. It's just not for us.
But for us, no.
Yeah.
And I think
we're going to get some fucking massive deal and have to betray all of our morals. Well,
as I said, you know, if someone wants to come and offer us $1,000 an episode, maybe I will.
Do it.
If it was a product that I like. Mm. I mean, I guess a lot of the brand deals we get offered are like, we will send you X of this thing, which is, I suppose, it's like $50 plus you can have a supply of this.
Yeah.
Which is more tempting, but still, I'm like, I'd rather just... It's too complicated. I like to have a simple life.
James does love a simple life.
I like a simple life. And okay. Someone was like, we'll do it all for you. I guess it's, the thing is, if once it was $1,000 an episode, we would hire someone to manage it?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Anyway, this is the conversation around podcasting at the moment. And if you guys want to come and chat with us about it, we're always open to have a discussion.
I just think that podcasting is entering its corporate phase, which
bothers
me.
Yeah, I
versus like that. The kind of garage, like in or attic, blanket over your head recordings phase, which I like a lot.
I love it too.
Anyway.
Okay, let's get on to today's topic, which is five of our
top tips
for creatives.
Yep.
So me and James have we haven't told each other our five top tips, and we're just going to go one-on-one, see if I'm sure we're going to have some crossover, but I'm also sure that we won't. I mean, imagine if we had five on five.
I mean, we'll phrase them in different ways, but I think that the themes might be quite similar.
Yeah.
And these are just things that we thought of in the 10 minutes before the podcast. So it's not like
this is I've been thinking about this all my life. So
exactly.
I'm very ready.
They're the five things that first came to my mind. But I don't see them as a definitive list. They're not like laws of creativity or anything.
Go, James. I want you to start.
Okay. My first tip is be precious, but not too precious about your workspace or environment.
Oh, that's an interesting.
Do you have anything like that? I guess I have to wait and see, don't I?
Yeah.
But... So my thoughts around this are that I think your environment is important. Like, you don't want to be, you know, doing your art next to a jet engine necessarily, unless you find that soothing. And for me, you know, going out to write at a cafe, and I know for you, Amy, going out to write at a cafe is a lot more productive, and it feels like you get twice the work done for less energy, which is really nice. But I think that we can obsess over this. And I think that we can, you know, my desk isn't completely clear, or
it's a perfect procrastination tool.
It is, yeah. Yeah. And by environment, I also mean, this is also about time. It's like, I don't have the full 2 hours, et cetera. It's like, you want to have more than 1 minute, but you can do a lot in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And you can finish books in 15 minutes a day.
Yeah, I agree.
And with a slightly messy desk.
I think like be less precious is a great rule for creatives.
Yeah, but also respect yourself. Like respect your art.
Yeah.
But it's like an art conversation about romanticizing it. It's like,
yeah,
you can, of course, feel like you want to create in a beautiful space. But
yeah,
if you're letting that become the main thing that you're doing is setting up your space, I think that's something that we can really get carried away with.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay, my first one is trust that you are meant to do this. So I obviously speak about a lot of different things that I think are really important for creatives, but as I write about it more and more and I think at like what sits at the core of what I speak about, a lot of it comes back down to trust. And I think this is a huge conversation. Like it's like a multiple podcast series on trust, but I want you to, as an artist, whatever circumstances you come across, rejection, procrastination, serious self-doubt, shame about your creativity, that trust that you are meant to be doing this. The thing you really want to do is the thing that you are really meant to do. And for me, this is the thing that sits at the heart of all of my work. Like when things aren't going right, when things are going right, I trust that this is the path that I'm meant to be on. And it just keeps me steady, even when nothing feels steady. And I just, it brings me back down to this is the work I'm meant to do. So I show up and I create because I trust that this is what I am meant to do. So I want you, no matter where you are on your journey, to trust that you are meant to be here. You're meant to be creating art and you are already on the path.
I love that.
Thanks. Two.
Two. Do less than you think you need to.
Oh, that's a great way of putting it.
Yeah. And I think obviously if you've been listening to this podcast for a long time, you would know our opinions on this, but I think that so many of us set too big a goals, especially too big a daily goals or weekly goals. I think the analogy that I like to use is you wouldn't, if you were training for a marathon, you wouldn't just turn up on the day and run the marathon. You would build up to it very slowly. It's not the perfect metaphor because you're not training for a race as a creative. You're hopefully building a, you know,
yeah, like
a habit, which
yeah,
butts into
it's a lifetime process.
But you know, if you're a writer, don't go, I'm going to write the same as the professional writer's daily word count mm-hmm. per day. Mm-hmm. Just don't do it. I think we often see it with NaNoWriMo as well. It's like people start NaNoWriMo, which is the National Novel Writing Month, and they have to write 1,600 words a day. And then they're just like, I burnt out. I hate writing now. Bye. Mm. I'm not writing again for the rest of the year. It's like, well, I just think it's so much gentler and kinder to ourselves. And also in the long run, it's much more efficient and productive to always take what you think you need to do and halve it.
Yeah.
Maybe halve it again.
Yeah, halve it again.
And then you will be surprised with how much output you get done from that.
Because you can just keep going.
Yeah. And, you know, even if you do find that you have a huge capacity for making art, you're better off finding that from the bottom up rather than from the top. From the top down,
yeah, you're having to cut back.
You're still better off. Even if you are naturally the strongest person in the world, don't go to the gym and try and squat 200 kilos. Even if you think in your soul that you're the strongest person in the world, test it out first.
Try the bottom.
Try the barbell first.
Yes.
Don't put 200 kilos
it's
on it.
It's dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, build up to, you know.
Yeah, I love that. Really good advice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my second one is rebel. I think whenever we come up against anything that's really tricky or troublesome or just frustrating in our creative career, a really good piece of advice is to just rebel against it. I think it gives us energy when we are stuck. I think that a lot of the times the rules and the regulations that are put around artists need to be rebelled against. I think if anyone is going to lead rebellions, it should be artists. So this is like kind of just like a core tenet, like rebel against the expectations that you have to put out a certain amount of work, rebel against the expectations that you have to have a gatekeeper, rebel against the fact that you have to have a certain amount of money in order to be happy, rebel against every single thing that you come up against and think this isn't right. And because you could either use that anger to disintegrate and, you know, toxify and be so upset about the way the world speaks and treats to creatives, or you can be part of huge revolutionary change because you rebel and you rebel in your art, you rebel in all of the ways that you show up in the world. But I think rebelling needs to sit at the center of what the creative does.
I agree. I think it's a really practical tip, actually. I think that it's often the way, I mean, certainly for us, that is how we've been successful so far.
Mm.
It's been doing, you know, not doing what everyone thinks. A big thing for us is, you know, with the Reels train on Instagram.
Yes.
When Reels became the hot new thing. And I think I just watching Amy stand her ground and being like, no, I'm going to stay as a static poster on Instagram. Mm. I know this is a very small example, but...
Yeah, but it's a good one.
No one knows.
And also, like, I've said it a million times because I just think I'm the only one saying it, and it's so boring. Static posts do so well still.
And that's, for some reason, a rebellious thing to say nowadays.
Which is bizarre and very of our time.
Yeah, or, you know, thinking about our decision to just publish Amy's first books on Amy's website, which we can't take credit for. That was Brooke Solis's idea.
Yeah.
That we stole from her after having coffee with her one day, and she's encouraged us very strongly to do that. And it was just such a weird, bizarre idea, which we were really scared of, and it was really rebellious against what everyone else was doing. It's even more random than self-publishing on Amazon. Like, it's even more rebellious than doing that.
Yeah.
And it was really successful for us. And I think it's a bit of a weird point of difference. Like, people want weird. People want absurd. Like, they want to connect with something.
You just catch people's eyes when you rebel, right?
And so much of content that appeals, I think, on social media is rebellious. Like, it's something that you go, what? It's like everyone goes, no, pick up, you know, do trends on social media, do trends. And then I think that, sure, that might help you in the short term, but is it going to help you to build fans?
Yeah, I agree. I think rebellion is a beautiful tool to use to combat a world that's very conformist in our creative realm. And I think, again, with like even with your craft, what is expected of you in the way that you create? You know, what genres have you been told to write? Can you rebel against them? Can you rebel against rules? Can you rebel against, like, you know, your teachings? Like, these are the things I think can bring real fire and life and point of difference into your work.
I think that if you do rebel and you are weird, the scary thing is that it will take a lot longer for anyone mainstream to notice you. But you will
find an audience
more quickly.
Like, which is more important now, I think, than finding mainstream appreciation.
Yeah, I agree.
And eventually they'll pander after you.
Exactly. It's like, you'll be weird until you aren't, and then you'll be a genius, essentially.
Exactly.
Which I think
artists are weird until they're geniuses, you know? That's a good post.
I feel like it's mirrored our journey a little bit as well. It's like,
100%.
We were completely weird for 9 years, and we've only just started being somewhat leaning into what we're doing by traditional people.
Yeah, which is interesting. Super interesting. Okay, your third one.
Celebrate wins even if they're small.
Great.
We're so bad. Like, we don't have a boss to give us a yearly appraisal or performance review. We don't. Often our friends and family don't get it. There's not like we are running a race where we get a medal at the end. It's just so much of what we do.
There's no societal structures in place to celebrate artists unless they're like huge
unless
wins.
You're winning an Oscar or a Grammy.
Yeah.
It's other than that. Because if you finish an album by yourself, if you finish a manuscript, if you write a poem, like, that is a huge achievement. But no one's going to recognize that because no one gets it.
Agreed.
And you have to get it yourself first. That is a massive achievement.
Yeah, not only do we have no societal, like, celebration, like, when we don't have any of those, like, pillars in our societies, but we've never been taught how to celebrate ourselves either. I still fucking hate having to celebrate myself because I got this, like, bitter thing, or I'm like, ugh. Like, the other day, and I asked you and Pat to... I gave you a bottle of champagne. I was like, pop it and say congratulations. And like, I'm proud of myself for doing that. But it is hard. You know, you'd rather just people be doing it for you because that's how we've been taught to celebrate. But it is really, really important because I think you end up quite bitter.
Yeah, I do. I think you end up bitter. I'm not saying, you know, every single day you have to be throwing a party for yourself. But I think when you do something cool, like when you do finish a project, or when you've been consistent for longer than you've ever been consistent before, or you just when you can, you should admit that you're proud of yourself, and you should do something. Like, it doesn't have to be a big monetary thing or like a party. It can just be, we had a really cute thing. He'd probably hate me saying this. My brother-in-law had this thing where he loves cricket, so he would pretend to take a catch in cricket when he did something he was proud of, because he was trying to foster a bit more pride in himself.
Yeah,
and it was so sweet. And I was like, I love that. Like, he'd do
he had a movement.
He had a little movement he did when he was proud of himself. And I think that just little celebrations like that can remind us
really
that
important.
We're doing something cool.
They remind us that we're on our own side as well.
Yeah.
And so often we feel the antagonist. We feel like we are the antagonist on our creative journey, and we are not.
Yeah.
We're here to celebrate ourselves.
Of course. What's your third one?
Okay, my third one's more of a classic on brand Amy one, which is just make shitty art. So, you know, obviously I say this all the time, but it is a core tenet of how I create. At the moment, I'm doing a huge project.
I'm stopping Amy because she's waggling her little bit on the microphone.
Can you hear that?
I can hear it. See? Can you hear that? That's a bad noise to me.
Okay, I'll stop.
I'm so sorry, everyone.
Okay, I'm just trying to suppress my rage. And
you're welcome.
What was I talking about? Shitty art.
Yeah.
I'm doing a very big project at the moment, and I am, you know, just pouring out the words and making crappy art. And it's been really on my heart because sometimes I'll read it and I'll be like, no, this is too shitty. And like, I'll really convince myself. I'm like, I know that I say like make shitty art, but this is really something else. Like, this is really not good, and it's not safe for me to create like this. And I have to come back. Like, no, this is exactly what I'm talking about. This is why I get to, you know, write books. This is why I get to be brilliant eventually, because I let myself be this crap. And it's been hard, I think, because with this project, you see a lot of the crap.
Yeah.
James has been editing quite quickly my work, and it's been hard sharing the shitty art so quickly. But it is my access. It is my footpath, my stepping stone to being good.
Yeah. I mean, editing is more powerful than we think it is. Like, it's so much more powerful than we think it is. Or, I mean, I guess what's the equivalent of editing in some... I guess
any, like reiterating, yeah.
It's that... We always think that the first draft is how a thing is.
Mm.
Whereas editing is 90% of the quality of the thing in the end. Mm. Like, all you're trying to do is get sand into the sand pit so you can make the sandcastle.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you're trying to do. And you very well may have brilliance in there. But if you don't, you can bring it in later.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fine.
Like, I really want you to know, like, I'm not talking about like okay art. I'm talking about bad art.
Like, we will read paragraphs of this and be like, I think that's going
to
be cut.
It's painful. The other day, I am going to tell this story.
Okay.
I had to console James because he was so upset at how bad one of my chapters was. Like, my chapter had... It's my rings on the fucking microphone, James. I'm sorry.
I didn't say anything.
You gave me a look.
Bad sound is physically painful to me.
I'm so sorry. I literally can't even hear it. Let me try.
I'm so sorry. But I am. If you're not picking up on this, and if you haven't picked up on this in 138 episodes, I'm a little bit of an asshole.
You're autistic, not an asshole.
Yeah, but sometimes it can be an annoying. It can lead to annoying traits.
No, it's not. What was I saying? You were very upset. I gave him a chapter, and it was so disoriented and just and like confusing and you know, not good, that James, as an editor, was very stressed out by it. And I ended up having to console him because I had done such a bad job. And it was just a very amusing moment.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, you know, it's so funny because, and this is the wrong, Amy and I work so closely to each other that we're almost bad people to share our work to each other. Like, I know Amy's writing so well that I feel like I can just come in and wholesale change things, edit things. But at the same time, then I feel like it's my project too. And then there's this weird feedback loop, and
it's a bizarre working relationship. It is. It's far closer than any normal author and editor.
Yeah, yeah. Because I feel like it's my job to fix it immediately.
It's not, because it's
going to be fixed over 4, 5, 6, 7 drafts.
And it's also like, it's also my responsibility. You're there to help me and guide me.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was a real moment. And then I was like, oh my God, I'm literally comforting someone because my art's so bad.
I know. It was funny when we realized what was happening.
Anyway, that's what I'm talking about, that kind of shitty art.
Yeah.
All right, your fourth one.
This is one that I think you might not, maybe you don't agree with it, but something you don't do is record your progress.
Oh.
So I write to word count goals, and then I like to either, this is something I've been doing lately since I've been upping my output, I like to tick off on a whiteboard, Jerry Seinfeld style, when I have done my word count goal for the day. I won't write the word count down. I tried that. That was a little bit, I don't know, I didn't like it. I just do it like a tally, like a one, like a little dash.
It's very cute coming up to your study and seeing your tallies accumulate.
And if I do a double day, where if I did double work, which is rare, I will do two tallies.
Special.
Yeah. And I just think it's really motivating to me.
Great. I love that.
And I think doing the tally means that you don't have to be so fixated on exactly how much progress you've made, just that you did make progress.
Yeah.
And that's, and then you don't want to skip a day.
I have an internal measurement system, I think. Mm. And I know that I'm not someone who would... James!
Amy's feet are centimeters from the cereal bowl. And I know she's thinking about touching it with her foot.
No, I'm not. I'm just trying to get comfortable. Oh my God, every time you are the worst in it. You're so grumpy.
It's because, look at me. I just sit here perfectly still. Recording a podcast.
I have to fidget.
I know.
What was I saying?
you have an internal tally.
Oh yeah, so I'm not super great with like I always love the idea of keeping planners, or you know, oh, I'd love to have like a whiteboard where I do all this stuff. I just, there's something about it, I just can't keep up with it, and it doesn't tend to help me when I do. So I'm always very aware of, you know, like how much words I've done today, or I just keep a tally in my head. I just guess it's maybe just not a system that works very well for me.
Yeah, I mean, I like things to be ordered and measured, and you like things to be
chaotic.
So
I mean, I don't know if I like it, but it's the way it has to be.
I mean, you know if you've done what you set out to do for the day.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, with a diary, like I have in my diary in my head. Everything's in my head.
I guess I like the weight of it. I like seeing the whole month's creative output there on the whiteboard. And I like being like, oh, it just feels like
satisfying. A heaviness, like a
weighted blanket.
Oh, that's lovely.
What's your fourth one?
Oh, and be prepared for success. So this is a big thing for me. I think that all creatives need to do like serious preparation for being successful creatives, and I'm talking in a much more traditional sense here. If you are someone who wants to connect to an audience, you need to prepare for that, and no one does. Everyone's out there preparing for failure. Everyone is out there with their backup plans, and no one is looking at how much their fear of success is getting in their way. And it is the biggest cock block to creative abundance. I see it in so many people, and they don't even realize it.
I mean, I feel it. I feel it for myself.
And no one wants to prepare for it. They think it's indulgent or silly, or it's not right. How could I do that? Like, I'm just starting my journey. You have to prepare for creative success. You have to know what success looks like for you. Oh my God, I've had like an energy drink. It's not really an energy drink. What do you call this?
Nootropic.
It's like...
It does have caffeine in it, though.
I'm feeling pretty breathy. I'm sorry. I need you to look at how you're going to have boundaries when you're successful. Like, if you've got fears about, like, losing your autonomy, I need you to already know what you are and are not going to do when you have a million different opportunities in front of you. I need you to look at whether you are ready to let go of struggle. I need you to look at... you know, I need you to, there's so many things, and I think no one wants to look at this before they are successful. And when we are successful, it's almost a little too late.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked a lot about in the past the fact that one of the best things that ever happened to Amy was she didn't get traditionally published when she thought she was about to, you know, 7 years, six, I don't know how long ago that was, a long time ago. And it basically gave you the time, even though at the time you felt devastated because you were like, well, that means I have to just keep working my shitty job that I hate. I have to keep doing X, Y, Z. Like, it's my life's going to stay exactly the same. This is terrible. Like, it seemed like a terrible, terrible thing. It was, I think at the time you would have said it was one of the worst things that ever happened to you.
It was one of the hardest days of my life.
And now we would say it was one of the best.
Yeah.
Because then it gave you that extra time to pick up journaling, to learn to prepare, to grow into yourself before you became more successful.
Yeah, let me choose myself before I was chosen. And I think that's a big part of preparing for success. You have to choose yourself before they choose you. Otherwise you will be in a constant search for external validation, and you will never feel enough. There is so much we must do before we get that very traditional form of success, if that's what we're looking for. And it starts now. It needs to happen now, and that's so exciting to me, but too many people just don't want to do that work.
Yeah, agreed.
Number five.
It's very related to the other ones, but make it a habit.
Amen.
I just feel like if you can find a way to habit, basically what the difference between making a habit and using willpower is that habits are easy. Habits don't take willpower. It's actually easier to do it than not to do it. And so many of us are trying to create from a space of making ourselves do it every day. So we have to draw on our reserves of willpower every day. We have to summon our tenacity every day to try and create. And that is really doing it the hard way, because it can be easy. It can be a habit. And we won't go into the hows and the whys of it, but you know, there are plenty of good resources out there, like James Clear's book on habits, BJ Fogg's book on habits. There's lots of good podcasts.
BJ Fogg, what a name.
I know, right? If you can make something a habit, and if you can figure out how to form your creativity into a habit, it doesn't mean every day necessarily, but it means on certain days, at certain times, you just do your creativity. I think that turns it into a kind of powerful flywheel that just goes. And you would just get so much more done for so much less energy than you think you would have otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. And that's, I completely agree. Like, I'm teeter-tottering on my fifth one, obviously, because it's all in my head. Again, I didn't write it down, which really reads as an Amy thing.
Yeah.
I was going to talk about consistency, but I think I'm going to instead go for this one, which is take yourself seriously.
Yeah.
I think, you know, obviously we have to have a bedrock of play in our creative experience. I'm sorry, I gesticulated and I bumped something.
Forgiven.
We have to have play in the experience, but I think artists need to take them, it's choosing themselves. We need to take ourselves seriously first, and we won't be taken seriously by the world for a very long time. For a very long time, people will think you're just fucking around. That's so hard. And know that me and James are taking you so seriously if you're navigating that space right now. But you deserve to take yourself seriously. And I think it's an integral part of how we progress as creatives. We have to do, it's a very vulnerable thing to do, but you have to take it seriously. And you have to look at yourself as an artist, as a creator, with like a capital fucking letter. It's cringe a bit.
It's a bit cringe.
Very important.
I mean, it comes back to making it a habit as well. It's like, if you don't carve out that time, if you don't take yourself seriously, you won't be able to form a habit. You won't be able to make your identity that you are an artist.
Yes.
You need to protect it. You need to defend your creative time and yourself as a creative.
Yes.
You need to tell people to, frankly, fuck off.
Yeah. And if you're not taking yourself seriously, it's very hard to put any boundaries in place.
It is.
It's very hard to protect what you're doing.
I don't know. Obviously, you don't have to tell. Say, you're like, I know, I can hear some of you out there going, I've got young children, I'm telling my young children to fuck off. It's like, obviously not.
Although you can if you want.
I mean, I guess if you have that kind of relationship with them, that's fine. But it might be something gentler, but you do have to learn to take it.
Yeah.
And they will know if you're taking yourself seriously. And
yeah, you give permission when you take yourself seriously. Mm. Oh, wow. You know, Elaine is really committing to this, and no one's told her she can. And so maybe I can do it too. You know, like, we set an example when we do something like that, and it's very, very powerful.
Agreed. That was fun.
Yeah, you enjoyed?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like buzzing.
Yeah, because there's two shots of espresso in that drink. Equivalent.
It's meant to make me focus.
I know. This is an amazing drink. Obviously, once again, based on our conversation earlier, not a sponsor, but we have this drink. It's called Newtonic. It's from a British PT called James Smith, who I follow on YouTube. And I bought a case of it the other day, and whoa, this thing goes. Like, it does cracks. Go. It is quite tasty. It tastes like a Fanta.
Very tasty.
Has the equivalent of two shots of espresso in it, and then a bunch of, you know, herbs and things that are supposed to design to help you focus. And it has, you know, things like theanine, which stop you getting a buzz, technically, but there's a lot of caffeine in there, so.
I know. I've taken it twice. It's really delicious, and I've been focused.
Yeah.
But it's like a kind of like manic energy.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, we've got to get stuff done.
I agree. I took it and I accidentally wrote 1,000 words.
Yeah.
In like
45 minutes. I love how I'm saying take it. We drink it.
We drunk
it. It has no calories and no sugar. It has very few calories. No sugar. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not necessarily saying you should use it, but it
is quite... I'm not sold, but I just needed to explain my behavior.
It's definitely helped us focus and get more done if that's something you valued.
Yeah.
I think maybe it's... As a sometimes thing, if you really have to focus.
It's a sometimes thing, yeah.
Especially if you have to do something unpleasant, like taxes or something, maybe.
Ew, James, why bring it up?
I know, I feel like I'm on top of our taxes for once.
Well done.
For once. ATO, if you're listening, we are on top of our taxes. Stop texting us.
All right, guys, thank you so much for being with us. As always, we're so grateful for you. I hope you have a really creatively abundant week. Thank you for your patience as we're a little bit on and off with the podcast regularity, but... You know, we're grateful to be with you when we can be.
Yeah, I mean, and this is what I'm talking about. If we had a sponsor, we couldn't have skipped last week.
Yeah, but then maybe it would be good.
Maybe, but I'm glad that we could skip last week. It was nice.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, babies.
Love you all.
Love you all. Ciao.
Bye.